Hey everyone, this is Sarah, and welcome to my show. Woohoo! Hey, Sarah here. Just me today. This is such an important message that I just wanted to come on directly. Don't have a guest, not interviewing anybody. The subject of today's podcast is how to raise your return on investment with your marketing. And I know this is something that a lot of financial advisors complain about. A lot of financial advisors don't believe you can get leads from active marketing. I'm here to refute that. Not only do I get leads for myself, but I am helping my clients to develop new relationships and get leads using the internet. Last week I had such an abundance of success with my clients that I actually was a little overwhelmed in terms of how to handle the next steps. That is how much success we are actually having with this. So this is going to change your practice, and whether or not you're a client of mine, I really hope that you listen, because it actually could change the whole way that you market. So I've got a lot here that I'm going to go over. In general, I have found that financial advisor marketing is pretty consistent with how marketing is done in general, which is a lot of informational barfing and a lot of validation and, aiming for credibility, whereas what I'm bringing to the table is relatability and the idea of really connecting with the person and talking with them about what matters by finding out what matters. So I'm going to give you an example of the lack of relevance that I have seen in so many realms of marketing from so many different industries. I'm going to give you some examples from real life, and you can just tell me if you agree with this, you've seen this. So the first thing is that I had an issue with my accountant, and it actually resulted in a surprise fee on my taxes. Not happy with my accountant, and so I decide I'm firing him. So I go around and I'm interviewing all these new accountants, and there was one that I was introduced to through a colleague of mine. And I get on the phone, and the guy is like, the first thing out of his mouth is, well, I've been in the business 20 years and I really work hard for my clients. I have a lot of happy clients. Great. Dude, like I do not trust you. You don't even want to know what I just went through, man. Okay. I'm so down on accountants right now. It's not even funny. And you're trying to sit here, give me this BS line. It just comes across as total BS because I don't know you. And I think that we do this a lot. Look, I mean, myself included, I can say I'm not perfect. I've made my share of mistakes. But one thing I can tell you is that I realize it, and that I think we should all recognize that when you tout your credentials to someone that does not know you, it comes across as BS. Just write that down in your notepad, okay? I'm going to tell you other things, other examples. So I was going to buy a couch. Because I have 4 children under 5 years old at this point, and my house gets used as a trampoline. So they ruined my couch, and I had to go get a new one. And so I'm looking around, and I walk in, and, people are like, how can I help you? Great. Okay. So no one says, and then they say, well, what are you looking for? Well, guess what? I don't really know what I'm looking for. I don't know what kind. I don't know if I want a sleeper or this or that. I don't know what even texture I want. I don't know what's going to hold up with kids. I don't even know if I trust you. So for me to just walk in there, it's like an order taker. A lot of people think sales is just order taking. And if the person doesn't walk in and know exactly what they want, and the informed buyer, so to speak, and is ready to sign on the line, the sale's not happening. And, I could have been educated by these people, but I was not, because the couch salesperson, none of them said questions like, they see me walk in with a baby carriage. They see me walk in with a double stroller, and they don't even ask the question, is this for you, or is this for what, a business? Is this for your parents? Is this for, somebody else? Who are you buying the couch for? What is the purpose going to be? Oh, you have 4 children under 5 years old. Maybe I should not recommend this fabric. Maybe you need a fabric guard. You're going to need this. You're going to need that. We didn't even get to that point because of this block that we all put up. And it's a defense mechanism, I think, that we have, because as the salesperson, we always, you know, in the back of our mind, we're all thinking, gosh, I need to support my family, right? Or, you know, gosh, I got bills to pay. But what I'm saying is we have to just have more self-control and know the right questions to ask. In a practical way to financial advisors, I'm going to tell you some examples of mistakes that I've even seen my own clients make. And these are really painful. I'm going to tell you why it's so painful for a financial advisor to make mistakes with leads. Because, you know, to get a $5 million person, a $2 million portfolio, to get a really high net worth individual, you know, the place that I live, and whatever, you may know about where I live, I've talked about it maybe in other places, but whatever, like, I just know that a lot of people with $50 million wealth aren't really walking around publicizing that. So these leads can be very hard to find, okay? So when you get one of these leads, you'd better do it right, because if you blow it, that's tens of thousands of dollars out the window. This is a big ticket sale. So you probably, financial advisors, I think, need to know they need sales training, okay? But not sales training like elevator pitch training. I hate that. Let me ask you, does anybody on this call like receiving an elevator pitch? I'm totally against the elevator pitch. But anyways, so what I'm saying here is that as a financial advisor, if you blow a lead, that is a huge expense to your business. It is way more expensive than anything a marketing consultant could probably cost you. Right? Like, I know me right now, I'm charging people like $1,000 or maybe a little more sometime on a retainer arrangement, $12,000 a year, right? I mean, you blow a lead, probably worth more than that. Okay, so understand it's very expensive to blow a lead. The second thing is, understand that it takes very, very, very hard work to get that lead in. I would say 95% of the work on the deal is getting the lead in the door. That's 95% of the work. And then 5% of the work should be closing it. But guess what about that 5%? That 5% is where the money comes from. It doesn't come from the 95% of work that you did. And the 95% of the work, that's you spending the money. The 5% of the work, that's the point when you get the money. You're not getting a single dollar if you don't do that 5% right. So focus your time and effort on conversions. As soon as you start getting leads in, do not proceed forward unless you are an informed and educated salesperson, and most people are not. So I'm going to give you a few examples. One example, a client of mine, we got through YouTube advertising, supposedly, and I mean, I guess you never really know where exactly these leads come from, but we have reason to believe it's from a YouTube ad that we ran. The guy came, you know, he called my client up. Person has $2 million portfolio. So this is a big ticket item right here. And my client gets on the phone and failed to understand the person's life, failed to understand where they were in their life. This is so painful for me to even talk about. In fact, I want to cry. So, you know, my client was able to report back to me about the details of, oh, this person has this pension or has this in this portfolio or that financial statement, this or that. But then nothing about what's the person's experience been working with financial advisors. Why is this person specifically approaching you at this exact moment as opposed to in the past or in the future? What is the person looking to get out of the relationship? Are they looking for you to be a guide to them? Are they looking for you to be a second opinion? Who else is involved with this process? Is it just the person? Is there an accountant and an attorney that they need? Is the wife involved? A brother-in-law? Who? Right? Who is the soul? Who is every person, the name of every person involved with this decision? Things like this, okay? But this was never addressed in the call. And as a result, my client came back to me and said, oh, he's not ready to move yet. He's, you know, a little bit egotistical because he's really a successful guy. And, you know, we'll just have to wait a year or so until he rolls around. Oh, no. I mean, he may be an egotistical person, but his arrogance, supposed arrogance, is not the reason that you lost the sale. The reason you lost the sale is that you failed to understand what it is that he wants. You had an opportunity and you blew it, okay? And you really want to get away from subconsciously blaming the client. I know it's hard. I mean, I had somebody stand me up twice in a row 2 weeks in a row, you know? And to be honest with you, I got a little emotional, made me a little bit angry. Like, how dare you? Like, you see me, a working mother here with four kids, and you're going to schedule a time with me and then not even show up twice? Like, I had some words going in my mind for that person, but it's really hard because if you get into that mindset of blaming the client, even subconsciously, even without realizing it, it's not a good place to be in, because then you may be in, you may feel motivated to at some point make the client feel that they've done something wrong. And you also never want to do that. You never want to make the client so blatantly wrong in a kind of brash way. You know, you never want to make the prospect feel that way. And it's not just like, oh, it's not a nice thing to do. It's like, you know, it's not gonna go well with them, right? I mean, whoever wants to feel like they're being made wrong without knowing really what the right way is? You'll never get to that conversation because they'll never talk to you after you make them feel that way. So now here's the other thing. Now, give you another example. Another client of mine reports back that he's on the phone with a, you know, a big executive, and the executive has money at, like, Morgan's, I'm sorry, I don't mean to say that name, delete, I didn't say more, I don't even know if it's Morgan Stanley or whatever, right? But some, forgive me all you Morgan Stanley people listening to me, I have nothing against Morgan Stanley, by the way. So the client has money at, like, a broker dealer firm where I think it's like a, you know, one of the bulge brackets, big firm, big name, whatever. And my client is telling the person, oh, but, you know, they're charging you higher fees, and, like, I'm fee only and this one's commission only. It's like, you're making the client feel wrong. I mean, he's with them already. He already trusts them. Despite all of this, he may be paying ridiculous fees. He may be paying it all in commission, but he's with him, dude. Like, you're just gonna lose by making this person feel bad about the decision that they made. Don't do that, okay? What you want to get to is, what are the long-term goals for this account? Do you care about the returns more, or do you care about preserving the integrity of the capital that you have? Because then that leads up to the fees that they're paying. Do you, right, like, all, what do you like about this relationship that you currently have in place? Oh, I like the fact that this person takes me out to dinner every quarter. Oh, okay, who is involved with that discussion? Now you're gathering information. Who does this person take out to dinner? Oh, okay, and why do you feel that discussion is important and rewarding? Oh, because he understands me really well. He understands my business. He has a specialty working with clients that, you know, with people that work at my business. Oh, I see. So an understanding of a specific aspect of your company's financial benefit offering, that is what you really like and what's really important to you. See what I'm saying in this example, okay? And then maybe you can make the person feel a little pain. But see, the marketing industry, sales and marketing, has typically trained people to, like, hone in on the pain and hammer and hammer and hammer and hammer. I mean, yeah, I think we can hammer a little bit, but I don't know. I really haven't had good results with that. I think it's way better to show a creativity and ideas, and show the person that you really understand them, and that you're walking with them, not that you're on the other side just trying to hack in, just trying to break in, right? So, a lot of financial advisors say, oh, just get me the lead and I can close it. You know, I close everything I get in front of. Just get me. When they talk to me about lead generation, they say, oh, you know, we're great once we get in front of people. And I'm picturing them sitting there in their buttoned up suits and at the fancy restaurant. And it's like, you know what? I actually think that statement is BS when people say that, because I think we have selective memory and we can't help it as human beings. Based on what I've seen in my clients, when we've gotten them opportunities and leads, or maybe opportunities that they didn't even know were leads, but based on their behavior, failed to get that person to the point where they were, like, ready to say, let's have the conversation. There are so many opportunities I've seen people blow. And I think the reason is that they, unless the person's, like, sitting there with the order ready, like, I'm just dying to, send me the ACAT form. I think unless they're ready to ACAT, the financial advisor doesn't consider that an opportunity. In other words, I think financial advisors very often are like, oh yeah, I close every lead I get. But they're just order taking. I think the orders, they'll take them, But when there's people that are maybe a little on the fence, then the financial advisor doesn't count that as a lead. Like, you know, oh, well, that wasn't a serious prospect anyways. I failed to close it, but there was nothing to be closed because it wasn't a lead. And this is where really you can gain a lot, because if you can do this effectively, know that most of your competitors really can't. So it's just not the no-brainer lead. There's a lot of opportunities that are hidden, especially when people, you're talking about money. Like me, as a result of my experience that I've been through with my accountant, I mean, I'm very hesitant to go out there and tell someone how much money I make, and because I think that had a little bit to do with my bad experience with my accountant, how much money I make, and sending him my financial statements because we had a bad experience with that, and all of that. I'm very guarded right now. People are very guarded. You got to disarm them, all right? And when you gain the ability to disarm, there's a lot of money to be made, right? So stop the elevator pitching. I'm going to talk to you about some elevator questions to ask, because I don't like the elevator pitch as much as I like the elevator question. The question is what disarms people, okay? So stop barfing, and I'm going to tell you the stop barfing process, okay? So when you get someone on the phone, I want you to say these words. I don't want you to say, oh, I've been in the business 20 years, me and my partner, we got a great investment management process. We're one of the best in the industry. Our returns have been great. Trust us. Oh, yeah, we'll save you on taxes. And we got a great team here. Clients are very happy with it. Don't say that. Like I said, it comes across like a BS line. When you get them on the phone, say these words. Ready? What is the number one piece of information that you are looking for today? And then shut the F up. And let them talk. Okay? I'm going to repeat that. What is the number one piece of information you are looking for? And then shut up. Okay? And listen to what they say. Then after you listen, then you ask another question. Okay? And at this question, I'm going to tell you the way to ask the second question. The second question should be a multiple choice question. Okay, and it should relate back to what they said in the answer to number one. So let's say that you say, what's the number one piece of information you're looking for today? And you could, and then they say, oh, I just was, thinking about retiring in 5 years and not sure what to do with my pension. You say, oh, okay. Get them to talk a little bit more about it. You listen. Then you ask a multiple choice question. Step two, multiple choice question. Begin the question like this. So, is it more your company benefits, or is it more a question of your cash flow needs in retirement? Or you could say something like this. So is it more the pension or is it the 401k? Because what you want to do here is you want to delve down more deeply into things. Okay, and you want to maybe even create a little bit of confusion, because, you know, you don't want to tell someone that they don't know something. You want to make them feel that they're a little bit confused, because then you are showing them the value of talking with somebody like you and eventually paying you. So it should relate, the second question should relate to their life, okay? Oh, so is it more, so you say you're looking for information about your pension. So is this more about the pension itself, or is it about how the pension could relate to meeting the cash flow needs of you and your family, you and your wife, you and your dependent children, whatever it is, because you want to move them with that second question. You want to move them away from the financial aspects and away and towards discussing their life. Not like life like, oh yeah, I got a dog. I get my hair highlighted every 3 months with Betty down the road. She's great. My kids go to private school. Not like about that, okay? Like life about, you want to get them talking about what their emotions are towards their money and what their concerns are towards their money and what they are worried about with their money as in regards to the consequences that it may have for their life. You have to understand the thing that they are scared of in their life, the outcome that they do not desire to see in their life, because if you understand that, then you can close the transaction. Okay, don't get into like the, what's going to intellectually satisfy you about learning all about their stock options. Don't get into a technical conversation with the second question. Move them towards their life. So you could say something like, second question, oh, so is it more about the pension or more about, or is it more about the pension or is it about the pension's ability to meet the needs of this wedding that you have coming up for your 25-year-old child? Oh, I see. Have you planned that out? The third question, have you planned that out? Have you ever actually looked at that? Because then when you say that, then you're going to get to what they're currently doing. If they're doing nothing, if they have no financial advisor, if they have a financial advisor and he or she is not doing it. Okay, now you're just gathering ammunition here, okay? So first question, open question. Second question, create confusion. Get to the point of what it is in their life that they're doing this for. Third question, create confusion by making them feel that they've done an inadequate job of assessing the situation. Only after you get through this can you move to the discussion of financials. Because if you move into the financial discussion too early, you're going to end up like the situations I described. You're going to end up blaming the client because you're going to think he or she's a jerk because you spent all this time and they confided in you about their stock options and this and that and they barfed all their information. Like, don't make them barf up the information either. There's plenty of time to barf later. You don't barf and they don't barf. What you're going to do is get just focus right in like a laser and get to it about psychologically how they are feeling about a money situation in their life, okay? Also, I just want you to understand here, especially when these leads come to you online, the online buyer is very different. Online leads are generally much harder to close. And I'll give you an example. A lot of my clients use Smart Asset, this lead service, right? And Smart Asset leads, I mean, this is generalization, but more often than not, these are very cold. Because I think Smart Asset or whoever, like it could be Palinin, or I think Palinin was acquired by Wiser Advisor or Guidevine or whoever, anyone that comes to you through the internet that knows nothing about you, I mean, this is the equivalent of like, this is like jumping out of a plane. I mean, granted, you have a parachute on, but it's still scary to jump out of a plane, agree? So, you know, it's like Match.com, if you've ever been on Match.com, okay? They're talking to a lot of people. They're looking for information, okay? They're not looking for a meeting. They're not looking for somebody nice. They're not looking for you to take them out to lunch or dinner. They're looking for the person who understands them well enough to be able to serve them up with the right information. So, I mean, I get it. You want to tell them about how you understand that they have an NUA on their IBM stock. You want to impress them with your analysis of whether or not they should convert to a Roth. But understand, the information itself is commoditized, right? I want to know, has a prospect ever said to you, I chose you because you understood how the Roth IRA works better than all the other advisors that I've ever spoken with? No! Okay, this is like having, like going to your orthodontist or your dentist and having your dentist talk on and on and on about how your jaw is in misalignment, or going to nutritionist and having your nutritionist talk or your doctor talk all about your niacin levels, right? It's boring. I can't pay attention to it for long. It's technical. I'm not interested. It's a commodity, okay? I can get it off of the internet. Don't have the meeting accomplish nothing for the person, but relay to them information that they could find on Investopedia. Don't be Investopedia. Go further like a human being. Connect on a human level. You want to make them say, the way you explain things to me made it clearer than the other people that I talked to, which reflects that you understood them better, that you could empathize, that you cared about the way you communicated enough to make the point come across in their terms, relating to what was relevant to them, relating to their life, and making it real to them, okay? So that's my story for today. A word on how to increase your return on marketing spending. This can apply to anything you're doing. If you're doing LinkedIn Messenger, if you're doing one-on-one conversations, feedback. Get to the real feedback. Find out what's on their mind using this process. And no matter what, stop barfing.